is Cascadia Public Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Hey, friends, welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed radio show. Canadian political news and views. This is show number 146. Today is November the 4th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Hey friends, welcome to the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. What do we have for you tonight? What did I say? It was November 4th. Yeah, it's the first show of November, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what we have. I have an in-studio interview with two persons, Eric Anderson and Stephanie McDowell of Gabriola. I don't have much of a bio on Stephanie here, but I do have something on Eric here. So, Eric has been an independent economist and in sourcing private equity and venture capital. He has worked as an investment advisor, also served as an economist for the Air Transport Committee and the Research Division of the Canadian Transport Commission in Ottawa. He's also professional standing with the Association of Professional Economists of BC. Since 2001, Eric has been pursuing the development of advanced technologies that increase the economic life of machinery, specifically but not exclusively wind turbines. Eric is presently in his second term of the as the president of the Gabriola Island Ratepayers Association. Stephanie, step up to the mic. Tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I'm retired. I'm retired.
Yes.
And I retired from a welfare ministry. So I spend some of my spare time doing advocacy work for low-income people who need assistance with government. That's about it.
Very nice.
A lot of letters to editors and ministers and what have you, complaining.
Good for you. You also have an email list that you send lots of information out to the people in your contact list. So
So
good for you getting the information out. Stephanie was on the show. I had two pledge drives. It was during the first one, the official one, last month, and you called in and told a fascinating story about the possibility of a relatively new internment camp in northern BC. Fascinating story. And afterwards, I had a couple people call me up and say, you've got to get this lady on the air. So here you are. This might be kind of Eric's night, but you are here nonetheless, and I thank you. So there we are. We'll hear from you shortly, let's hope. All righty. Okay, very well. What else do we have tonight? So, of course, these interviews are going to take place in the first hour. And in the second hour, we can look forward to listening to on my favorite corporate media, Fox TV, John Coleman, who is the founder of the Weather Channel. Well, this audio clip is talking about Al Gore being sued by over 30,000 scientists for the global warming fraud. And some very interesting news just came out today in an article I pulled off of PrisonPlanet.com. It is called Al Gore Admits CO2 Does Not Cause the Majority of Global Warming. This is a startling concession which devastates the legitimacy of the carbon tax cap and trade agenda. You know what? If you're in BC right now, you're paying an extra 2 cents on your gasoline due to this, more than likely, this scam. So that's interesting news. We'll get to that. So I am going to be reading an abbreviated version of that article from Paul Joseph Watson of PrisonPlanet.com and hearing the clip, which came out in July 2008. Again, John Coleman, founder of the Weather Network. Also, we're going to be listening to Gary Null speaking out at the New York State Assembly hearing this last October 13th. It's in three parts on YouTube. We're going to be hearing the first one. And Gary Null is an American talk show host and author on alternative and complementary medicine and nutrition. He is also an outspoken critic of the medical and psychiatric communities. So I've been following this false flag flu, this H1N1. A lot of problems in that, that's for sure. Another thing we're going to hear from, well, more than likely, the author J.K. Rowling, who's the author of the Harry Potter series that, boy, put a lot of books in a lot of kids' hands, and that's a good thing. I don't really care if kids read comic books. As long as they're reading, that is a hell of a start. So this here is a commencement speech from Harvard. I'm not too sure what year, but the topic she chose is failure, and I think you're going to enjoy this. It's a little bit surprising, so that's another piece we're going to listen to. I have not read any of the Harry Potter, and I've only seen one of the movies, and I was not impressed, but that doesn't mean that I don't have respect for this author and, what in particular, what she has to say on the topic of failure. Okay, and then we're going to conclude the show with, I was on Lynn Thompson, Lynn Living on Purpose Thompson, on her show last week, explaining in depth, it's about a half hour piece, this Truth Convergence Conference that I'm putting on, which is November the 29th, featuring six speakers, six different topics. The thing they have in common is that, well, our corporate media and our governments are not giving us the straight goods on these topics, and so I'm hoping that many people will come out and listen to what these local experts in their field have to say. So I will get very specific, a half hour worth, on in the last half of the show. And again, this was, you might have heard this already, it was on Living on Purpose, which is rebroadcast, so it played twice. Boy, if you're really addicted to CHOY, you've heard it, this will be time number three. It'll probably sink in by then, right? Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's the outline. Now, I want to start the show off with reading a clip. I'll turn our Ashley McIsaac off. We started off listening to Bruce Coburn, Action Speak Louder, then we heard DJ Shadow, and then Ashley McIsaac. So how I am going to start this show off will be reading a piece by David Icke, and this comes from his weekly David Icke newsletter, davidicke.com, if you would like to receive this weekly update. So listen to this, and this is talking about hypocrisy, I suppose, and what it made me think of is the NDP, the federal NDP, criticizing the Harper government for not having the flu vaccines ready in a timely fashion, or the proper amount ready in a timely fashion, as opposed to, why not, pointing out that these vaccines have not been proven safe, the results are not in, as well, why not talk about some of these ingredients that should never, ever be put in a human being body? So big problem. NDP, again, playing the role of pretending to be lefty and caring about us and, you know, pretending that we have this left-right shift or paradigm of government, and we don't have either. We've got, well, it looks like fascism and a lot of bad actors. And the NDP, you're in my sights. And so let's get on to this David Icke piece, and I think you're going to enjoy this. So David Icke says, I have said many times that what you fight, you become, and this is a wonderful example. The lady talked about the need to silence Griffin and deny him access to the BBC to protect our freedom and democracy, as if we actually had freedom and democracy. Now, hold on, you're going to find out who Griffin is real shortly. He's the leader of a British party calling themselves the British National Party. So we'll get to that shortly. And this is an important part. Point. If you equate a threat to freedom and democracy with a two-bit party with not a single MP in the British Parliament, then the key understanding is lost. The British Parliament, in league with the European Union, is demolishing the most basic freedoms every day. And democracy, which has massive flaws in itself, anyways, disappeared long ago, if it ever really existed. The system doesn't need Nick Griffin and the British National Party to destroy freedom. It is doing perfectly well without them, thank you. I asked the lady, as I asked the other protesters at the BBC decision, if she was campaigning for Tony Blair to also be banned from Question Time and other such BBC political programs. Blair, after all, is responsible for the slaughter of more than a million people in Iraq alone. Of course, that is a low estimate. If the British National Party, why not him? Why not ban the British cabinet that supported the manufactured wars of death, destruction, and conquest of other people's lands? Why not ban Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who, with Blair and Clinton, imposed sanctions against Iraq in the 1990s that, even according to the UN figures, cost the lives of more than 500,000 Iraqi children? Where does it end? Let's ban everything we don't agree with, shall we? What a world of freedom we would have then. The lady replied to my questions in a blaze of fury, and she said that she called for Tony Blair to be tried as a war criminal. But millions of people have already done that, and that wasn't my question. I asked if she was campaigning for Blair to be banned from the BBC, as she was with Griffin. The answer, no. But why not? Griffin runs a party of overwhelmingly prejudiced and race-obsessed fanatics who want to see people of dark-colored skin removed from the country, but will never get the chance to do it. Blair, on the other hand, blatantly lied to send in the boys to kill and maim millions of dark-colored innocents in Iraq and Afghanistan and caused horrific birth defects for generations from the spent uranium in the weapons they were unleashing on the population. So which one is the most dangerous fascist? Interesting point there. You know, they're making a big deal about this, obviously, a very prejudiced party, you know, a bit of a fanatic. But if you look at who's in charge, they're the ones doing the damage. They are the fanatics. And they're not being banned from the BBC programs, are they? No. Interesting. So, again, I get back to that point about this swine flu scam. The current numbers right now, 12 people have died in BC, only one of which did not have a prior serious medical condition. So that's one person. Keep in mind that 2,500 people die in Canada every year from the flu. H1N1 is nearing maybe 100. However, I know of two people that have gone to local doctors here. They gave the, I got a sore throat, I got a sore this, I got a scratchy that. Well, you've got H1N1. That's what the doctor said in these two cases that I'm aware of. No test, no nothing. You've been labeled H1N1. That's not science, that's not medicine, that's a big fat scam is what I think that is. Okay, so that was David Icke, and mirror, mirror on the wall is what he was calling that. Okay, well, let's get on. I've got to cover the weather update, don't I? So let's get on to that. Okay, very nice. So we're going to get to our guests really, really shortly here. I'm going to take a quick breather. I'm going to put an audio clip on. And this comes to us from the tinfoil hat lady. Yes, Beata Van Berkum out of Saskatoon. You can visit her YouTube channel, which is the tinfoil hat lady. And she's going to be talking tonight, a short piece on this fear, this flu fear factor. That's, as you know, it's been a theme on the show, last quite a few weeks. With, you look at your daily newspaper and they're saying, be afraid, be very afraid, this flu is going to kill everyone and it's going to be hell. And that is not the case at all. As I explained already, there's only one person that you can say died from the H1N1 in BC, and what's the chance that they even were tested for this? Probably pretty slim. Okay, so let's move on to Beata talking about the fear, the flu fear factor. And then we'll be back in discussion with Eric Anderson, economist, and Stephanie McDowell, both of Gabriola, British Columbia. Okay, friends, be well.
Hello, YouTube. It's Tinfoil Hat Lady here. Just wanted to give you a little update about what happened when I went to work yesterday. Everybody was lining up to get their H1N1 infusion and all flow shot. I was a little worried about these people, but what I realized is that because I don't watch mainstream media and I don't expose myself to this hype, that I wasn't affected by the fear that these people were to go line up and get this H1N1 and their flu shot. I've never had a flu shot. I've never gotten sick from any flu, because again, I use colloidal silver and blood electrification, silver pulser, sodainstruments.com, or toolsforhealing.com. Blood electrification, it's very simple. And colloidal silver is very simple. You can make it with distilled water, you get your nice silver wires with the silver pulser, and you make it in a beaker. You stir it with a plastic fork, or plastic utensil, and you store it in brown glass bottles because the sun isn't good for the colloidal silver. And then you just gargle with it. Now, if you're drinking a lot of colloidal silver, you do have to, you know, refluorate your body, your tummy, because it will, you know, wreck those bacteria. But it's not going to turn you blue or whatever if you make it correctly. 3 to 5 parts per million is all you need, a nice golden color, and you use distilled water, not tap water. So there's lots of stuff that we can do besides lining up from fear. And people were coming back into the lab and saying, oh, my arm is so sore from getting the shot. Oh, wow, wow. Jeez, I wonder. So because I'm only a casual worker, I said, oh, well, you guys, when you guys get all sick from your shots, maybe I'll get some shifts here. But it's all the fear. And that's what I really noticed yesterday was the fear. And how that fear is so motivating. And that's how we've been trained, through fear. Authoritarianism. It's almost like there's something in our brain that makes us want to submit to authority. I would like to challenge everybody out there to just be their own authority. How would that feel? For you to just be your own authority. That's kind of an interesting, awful concept. We're not really down with that. People might call me an anarchist, or that I love chaos, or something like that, that we need all these rules, we need all this stuff. And then, you know what? Somebody even said that people that don't get the shot are putting other people at risk. Well, excuse me, if the other people already have their shot, how can me not getting a shot put them at risk? I mean, people are just not thinking. This is like a seed meme or a seed thought that has been put out there so that people will turn on other people. I can't believe it. Anyways, Tinfoil Hat Lady here saying, I love you. And get out of the sheep pen, people. You don't need a flu shot. The pandemic is here. Give me a break. And for those of you who want a little update on my personal life, you'll have to wait. Talk to you later.
Oh, we gotta wait. What a ripoff, Beata. Come on, tell us the goods. No, I'm kidding. Thanks. That is the Tinfoil Hat Lady telling you that... It's all hype. It's all hype, folks. Okay, so we're going to move into our interview now. We have Eric Anderson. We're going to focus on with Eric and Stephanie McDowell. I hope that your microphone number three. Hello, Eric.
How is that? Is that working?
That sounds fantastic. And okay. Stephanie, how are you coming through?
I think it's okay.
I think it's pretty good, too. Okay, very nice. Let's see, Eric, how do I want to start this? I was speaking with a lawyer recently concerning the wording of the Bill C-6, and I took a look at it, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And so it seems to me that lay people are not intended to understand the legalese speak of lawyers, and I'm wondering, well, it seems as if it's almost like a make-work project as well. Let's make sure that we need lawyers around to explain what that lawyer just said. And I'm wondering, however, can we say the same thing about economics? Is it a foreign language? You've sent me a fair bit of literature this last week, and to be honest, a lot of the terms I was not familiar with. I didn't know the context to use them, and unfortunately, I did not understand a lot of what you sent me. Is that similar? Is it kind of a different language? What's going on?
Ray, just like you're suggesting, the language that's picked by various groups of professionals is intended by design to be exclusive.
Hmm. Okay.
And so if you take that as your starting point, then you look at all the kinds of phrases and acronyms that are used. They're designed so that the audience is just themselves. They talk among themselves.
Hmm.
And you go along for the ride, essentially.
Okay.
And they believe that by keeping you ignorant, that is a convenience to them to pursue whatever it is they want to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes very much sense. And also in our email discussions this last week as well, I was, I guess, hoping to kind of point you in more of a conspiratorial direction, which is kind of where this show goes. I don't believe in coincidences. I think that the financial elite have a pretty good grasp of what's going on, and they've been working on manipulation for a long time, and certainly with wars. And I'm just wondering. So this is a quote.
You carry on.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to read a quote from you, and it's really well said, and I firmly agree with what, and I'm hoping that you're going to expand on this a little bit. You said that, speaking about so many poor judgments in the last 10 years, financially speaking, in Canada, I believe is where you were talking about, that it could only mean that everyone is either brain dead or deliberately destroying wealth of the many for the benefit of the few. Can you maybe expand on that idea? Is I hope I didn't misread that.
No. A good starting point for maybe the audience, if they want to, is to go back to a historian. His name is Anthony Sutton, and he's done a lot of work on the history of the United States, in particular the Federal Reserve System.
Mm-hmm.
And out of all of that, he's concluded that history is more deliberate as opposed to accidental. Now, I know you can't have all of one or the other. It's got to be some kind of a middle spot.
Certainly, yeah.
So if you come at it from the point of view of looking at things and not believing that they're coincidental or accidental, then you start to look for what are the footprints in the snow that tell you what direction things are going. Hopefully, they're clear enough and you're going to get a guidance from it. So going back to the quote, what I'm saying there is that by the design of certain actions in Canada and the United States and overseas as well, the outcome always seems to be the same. It comes out to the benefit of certain narrow interests, usually financial, most often financial, and at the expense of the many, which is what I call socializing losses and privatizing gains.
Okay, very nice, yeah.
Now, 10 years, you could go back more than 10 years. You could go and you could run 100 years on that.
Right.
But the belief that, like the Minister of Finance was on in the Standing Committee on Finance answering questions last week.
Mm-hmm.
And
Prentice, Jim Prentice?
No, Jim Flaherty.
Oh, Flaherty, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
And at one point he was questioned about being unprepared in some context. His answer back was a snappish, well, you know, this all came and happened as a big surprise.
Mm.
Well, I can tell you from my own personal interventions for the last 10 years that none of this should have been a surprise.
Mm.
And I'm not the only person who's been doing this. The literature that abounds in my profession, the economist profession, goes back more than 100 years, describes what has been going on, what causes what. So to act as being surprised is a deceit.
He always seems to have this a deer caught in the headlight look. You know, he always has this sad, I've got more shitty news for you guys. I'm really sorry, son of a gun. I'm sorry about this. That's just my opinion.
Well, he's had a lot of training. He did quite a bit of that in Ontario.
Okay. Is that where he's out of provincial politics?
He was a finance minister, I think. Wasn't he, Steph?
Okay.
I'm not certain.
I think he was, yeah. He was a finance minister in Ontario.
Right, right. So he did such a wonderful job there. He's been promoted to...
Yeah, that's right. He moved up the ladder of the food chain. Yeah, they decided he was to be anointed, I think.
Yeah. I'm not from Canada, but Canada is very proud of history that no longer exists today. You know, kind of the social safety net that I'm wondering if maybe you can speak about that.
Yeah.
When was its heyday? You know, when there was more financial equality. What can you speak on that for a second?
Yeah, the turning point was in 1866. Up until that point, inclusiveness of the native culture was the salvation for the incoming immigrants. They only survived Canada by learning the ways of the natives.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
And that created a sense of inclusiveness in Canada, and the motto of Canada in the documentation was peace, welfare, and good government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the welfare has come to be a pejorative word, and that wasn't used in that way in that time. The French had some nice words in the meaning of welfare in French was very inclusive and supportive. It meant well-being. Now, in 1866, the Tories got a hold of that next document to come along, and they inserted the word order in place of welfare.
Hmm.
So the theme then changed to one of domination, one of dictatorship, one of direction. Order was introduced when Canada, as a country, had really, it was an aberrant kind of thing to put on it. Still is.
Hmm.
Order does not fit with Canada.
Hmm.
Welfare does, but not order. We are a country that has succeeded because we are inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the current activity, you know, back in the 70s, I was invited to become a member of One World Society as an economist in Ottawa.
Hmm.
And I asked the person making the invitation, what are you folks all about? So he told me, and I said, well, that's anti-democratic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any part of that. Well, that was the end of that invitation, and we went our separate ways.
Silly
but
you.
The point is, I want you to know, and your listeners to know, that that actually was a fact in my life in the early 70s in Ottawa.
Okay.
So I'm not alone. I'm sure other people were invited, and other people said yes. And so to say that that kind of inside elitist group does not exist or never has existed is a lie, because I know it does. It did.
Now, would that have been a national group, or with strong ties to an international, or strong ties to the States?
Well, I didn't
England?
Get that far in my discussions, but you know, subsequent reading, you have to believe that they're connected to the Bilderbergers and to the Council on Foreign Relations. And in fact, if you go back to Esslin's book and you look at all the participants in the various conferences that he documents, you would see that there's a pattern that includes elite people in Canada, including our finance ministers and our leading publishers and our leading foreign affairs people, our leading business people. Yeah.
Military as well now.
Yeah. Could be. I'm not. I can't say I have any direct knowledge of military. But
okay. I'm thinking of the summit in Banff 2 years back, which was American. The SPP they were calling it then.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very well. Let me see. There's quite a few topics that you had on for potential discussion.
Yeah.
Is there one that you would like to lead off with? You know, because we've kind of been just touching the bases so far.
Well, perhaps the best way to start is to suggest that I took opposition to the use of common shares and private investments in the public's money, which is the Canada Pension Plan.
Okay.
That changed in 98. The government was persuaded to follow the rest of the world down that path, and they did. They changed the rules.
Oh, so that's to invest this pension money in the stock market? Is that my correct?
Some of it, yeah.
Okay.
So it's like having a portfolio of investments, and that would include that kind of dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't discover it until sometime in 2002. And that's when I started taking issue with it, and I took issue with the then finance minister, who's Paul Martin. Since then, it's been continuous. Now, the issues I've taken with them on are issues regarding the appropriateness of these kind of investments in a fund that is for 16 million people. I mean, you cannot meet the criteria, the investment criteria of knowing your client, because it's impossible. You can't ask them, or they don't ask you, if you want to have a margin account, which means, you know, borrow against your investments. And they don't ask you, because they can't or won't, if they have discretion over your money, which is discretionary investing. So those three things, which are cardinal in the normal business of investments in Canada and the United States, don't apply in cases like this, which means that if you can't meet those conditions, you have to step back and be a lot more cautious. That isn't the character of the Canada Pension Plan conduct from 1998 on, and in particular in the last 4 or 5 years. They have moved out into making private investments. Private investments are, in their nature, ones that have no value that you can count on. So going back to your Harvard mention,
mm-hmm.
In the case of the Harvard Endowment Fund, they had a fund valued at $42 billion U.S. at the fiscal end of 2008. They couldn't post, they weren't able to post their 2009 results until only about 2 weeks ago. And the reason why was that they first of all had to recognize a 25% loss in value.
Wow.
They then had to argue with the auditors about disclosing all the liabilities that they have attached to some of their investments. And then on top of that, they have private investments they could only get a bid for of 45%. And they wouldn't want to show that to their beneficiaries because that means a 55% loss in that particular investment. Those are the bids they got when they went to the market to get bids on those. They wanted to try and sell them, but they couldn't find anything better than 45% of what they were showing them in the account. So that fund has taken such a hit, the whole program in Harvard has been turned on its ear. All the people who go to Harvard, have been going to Harvard, now are in a state of difficulty because they don't know where they're at. They don't know the kind of courses they're going to be able to get. They don't know the continuity that's going to be there. It's put a really big dent. And that was done by all the U.S. guys who are, quote, talked of as the smartest guys in the room.
Mm-hmm.
The big names at Harvard at the time when some of these investments are strapped on are now, heaven forbid, in the U.S. Treasury Department and heads of senior positions in the government. I mean, it's just incestuous beyond belief, and they are non-apologetic for being horribly, horribly wrong.
Hmm.
Now, you come to Canada, and we got the Canada Pension Plan, which is, like I said, everybody's money.
Hmm.
We all under law, we have to give them the money.
Okay, now that kicks in when you're 65, is that correct? That's for seniors?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, the way the contributions are made, they're over and above what's needed to pay out. There's a surplus created. So when you go back in the history and look at the Canada Pension Plan, the board got initially in bonds and cash about $42 billion. That was the starting point. Then, with contributions that weren't needed to pay out, over the course of the period till now, the end of the fiscal year ending in March of this year, they received in total, cash and bonds, something like $97 billion. At the time, the fund was valued at $107. So all of the work, all of the risk, all of the thrashing and fees and all the rest resulted in that small dimension over nearly 10 years. That was the added value that they made. Now, you can't have such a klutzy result unless you go out and try to do it. I mean, if they had simply bought the indexes, either in the U.S. or Canada, they would have doubled just the index alone, forgetting about trying to cherry-pick stocks and make investments. Anyway, they're not listening to my discussion or my criticism about the policy of investment, so I decided I would go about 3 or 4 years ago, switch to looking for the individual investments to see what they looked like. And there's a long list of those, and they're all doozers.
Now, are they making everything public?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so they're not hiding anything.
No, these are investments that you can go on the public record and see.
Okay.
So what I say is on the public record. I don't speak of anything that's not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, the classic just happened. This is the one that I'm so steamed about. A company in Australia called Macquarie Communications Group is a company that is like an income trust, and it's organized initially by an accumulation of various like assets by the Macquarie Bank. They then assemble it into a package, put it on the stock market, and float an issue. And it's now then called Macquarie Communications Group. The class of assets are all related to communications. So it would be radio, television, telecommunications, landlines, satellites, whatever, in Australia and in Europe. Now, those assets are, in a format they were in, are meant to earn a steady income and pay the shareholders like a dividend, regular as clockwork.
Okay.
Now, in the first 6 months of the last fiscal year, which is a reporting date of the 31st of December 2008, the independent auditor that they were using was a company called Pricewaterhouse. And the report at that time was a loss of a little over $1 billion Australian dollars for the 6 months. The balance sheet was in negative territory. It was a negative of $156 million. So that meant that in terms of the financial pages, liabilities and assets, as described as assets, question there, there was a negative. They were underwater by $150 million. Not surprising, because after a year ago, the markets globally took a hit. Not surprising, this stock traded down to below a dollar. It was trading in the 80-cent Australian range.
Okay, and where was it at a time?
Previously, it had been around $253.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
so it was a rollback, but the rollback was reflective of two things. It was reflective of their loss. As a company, it was reflective of their general market condition. So this was a company that was hugely over indebted. Now, you come back to the issue of conspiracy here. One of the features of the conspiracy that's been perpetrated is to over indebt companies and individuals. You cripple them by debt. You're generous with debt. Now, this company was crippled by debt. It had this huge pile of liability, something in the order of $10 billion Australian dollars. Along comes, the banks, probably, for this company, and they say, look, you cannot let this carry on. You got to find a way out of this problem. We're not going to give you any more money, and you need cash. And you can't borrow anymore, so, it's either you find a way out or we'll put a nail in your head.
So would that have been a National Australian Bank or international?
It's a consortium in that caliber of size of lending. It would be a consortium of all international banks.
Okay.
I'm sure there were Canadian ones in there, too. Anyway, about 3 weeks before the end of March, which is the end of the fiscal year for the Canada Pension Plan, the stock starts to move up. And on the 31st of March, after the year end, the Canada Pension Plan announces a 100% takeover of the shares at $2.50. So that means that they were telling the market they were going to pay three times more than what the previous market trading activity of that stock indicated its value.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's one hell of a premium.
Yeah.
You go along a little further and into the period around June of this year, and the stock has this peculiar habit of trading up above the 250 level. And it's, you know, you sort of scratch your head and wonder why. They come around to the date just before the closing of this transaction, and bang, turns out that they're going to offer $3 now.
Hmm.
And you say, well, why? And if you go back and look at the reports out of Australia, there were three blocks of traded stock that were basically being used as extortion devices. So they managed to get the price up to $3 a share, and they closed in the beginning of September of this year on $3 a share.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sorry, now was it trading on the Canadian market or Australian market?
Australian market.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's in Australia for this company.
Okay.
Now, parallel in this time frame and before, just so you know, a New York company called Risk Metrics. It's a company that does examinations of large enterprises to see the authenticity there for people who want to make investments or buyers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking very big size. Risk Metrics had done, at somebody's behest, an examination of the Macquarie Group and other fellow travelers' models of corporate conduct. And if you wanted, I could read sections, but I can tell you, it was everybody in the Macquarie Group should have been in jail, if you believe this report.
Wow.
There was every single thing that you could do wrong, inside dealing, self-dealing, ripping off with fees, transactions back and forward with a fee all the time. I mean, it was like just a money machine for these guys.
Now, was that in creating its fall in value or in its rebound?
No, this was separate and apart. The Risk Metrics report was done a year and a half ago. So the market knew about this. It may have contributed to the drop in the price, but the point is, this was a description of the character of this group of companies, Macquarie, Babcock & Brown, and like Travelers.
Hmm.
There are similar groups around the world. They're not alone.
And you're saying this is in the communications field?
Well, no, these are the financial engineers.
Oh, okay.
This is going back to the center point of your story, which is about the financial community and the way it conducts business and the way it carries on ripping people off. So Macquarie Group got headlined by this Risk Metrics group in New York. Very, very bad dudes. So I'm saying to myself when I read this, and I'm reading in front on the other side, that the Canada Pension Plan is going to not only buy this Macquarie Communications group, but they're even going to carry on having the Macquarie's folks run the business for them.
Okay.
And I'm saying, this is really smelly. So I do my usual. I send off a note to the minister, and Minister Flaherty, and I say, you know, this is kind of not right. Surely you can stop this from happening because it just stinks. We're not talking peanuts now. We're talking $2 billion. It's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing. I mean, they just sail right through. Minister says nothing. Sail right on. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm looking at this, and it's going to come in. Now it's into the Canada Pension Plan as an asset, and it's going to be featured as a private equity investment. So I'm saying to myself, now, how in the heck are they going to value that? Because they got to produce an annual statement and a quarterly statement. They got to produce an annual statement that's audited. Well, guess who the auditors are? Deloitte and Touche. Well, then I find out, I go back and look at some Australia stuff. It's Deloitte and Touche that wrote the report saying this company's worth $3.15 a share.
No, yeah.
So then I send this off to the minister again. I said, don't you think there's a conflict here? There's a problem? Silence. So I wrote to the auditor, the Canada Pension Plan auditor, who's supposed to look out for us, and the managing partner in Toronto, and I said, okay, these are various things that are happening in this account. I question the valuations that are there, and in specific terms, this is one particular asset that's coming into this account. Now, as auditors, how are you going to value it? And I gave them a whole bunch of options, including zero, because it was zero by the financial statements of Pricewaterhouse, 80 cents a share, which was the market before it all got steamed up, $3 a share, the price paid, or what?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so far, nothing back, as you can imagine. But I wanted it on record because people are going silent when they don't want to address these very troubling issues. So now you go back to this matter of, is it accidental or is it by design? Too much of this is, I can tell you, I look at your face and you can see this is a real weird story. You can't find any reason for it. I can't find any reason. Can you, Steph?
No.
No? So you come back and say, well, the only reason it can hang together is that it's all by design. And what is the design? It's the design to get the financial institutions out of a sticky position, bolster the, by bringing in a heavy-duty owner, deep pockets, bail them out, and so they're okay, Jack. Too bad about the investors from the Canada Pension Board. We'll just collect some more taxes. No problem. And that's, of course, what the politicians do and are talking about
right now. Right, right. That sounds very similar to the bailout packages that, primarily the States, but also Canada.
Oh, Canada, that was terrible. I mean, they were given $75 billion, and what they did is they called it mortgage paper. I mean, to put a little window dressing on the term, it was trade paper that was not worth what they said it was worth. Nobody really knew what it was worth because nobody would buy it. And they had to get it off their capital accounts because otherwise they'd be in difficulty. They wouldn't meet their 8% requirement for fractional reserve banking. So they clean up their balance sheets by taking it off and giving it to the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. Thank you very much. Swap cash for paper. Now they still have an opening to do another slot. You know, they can go to, I think, as much as $125 billion total. That's still open to them. The government of Canada still has it open. But that won't hold them back. I mean, if they need more, they'll get it. That's what our government does.
Okay. Can we talk for a moment? As a matter of fact, we're starting to run out of time, unfortunately. I was going to ask you about the bailouts of this last year. Where is your and my money going? We know that the auto industry received a large chunk, which seems very capitalism is supposed to be about, you know, the healthy company moving ahead, and those that don't do so well, they fall by the wayside. And that certainly is not what seems to be happening in the auto industry anyways. Where else was my money going to as far as bailouts? What in Canada?
Well, it's mostly, I mean, it's going to end up relieving the banks of sticky loans. That's all of what it's destined to do.
Okay.
So it's shoring up bank shareholders. You see, one of the things that's forgotten in all this conversation is that when you're in private business, you're supposed to be prepared to take a risk and be responsible for your mistakes as well as your wins.
Yeah.
Well, in Canada, we seem to have forgotten the first part. You know, we socialize the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Very convenient for everybody who wants to, you know, carry on having a good lifestyle.
Yeah, and privatize the gains.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Where is this going?
Oh, we got a ways to go. About 100 years of literature talking about something called the acceleration principle. You can check it out. And what it describes is what happens in the economic system when you ramp up. You get signals from the demand side that cause ramp up in production. Well, those signals have been exaggerated beyond belief by the huge credit production that's gone on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That is created enormous unproductive assets, useless assets, and those have to be wiped out. And that is one hell of a penalty. If you go and look at the shipping activity in the world, go to the Baltic Dry Cargo Exchange.
Right, yeah.
And look at that. They're all parked. Mm-hmm. There's no activity. And until you see activity and sustained activity, nothing is going to recover. Because that's where people actually make business. They say, I want a load of grain, or I want a load of copper, or I want a load of iron.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where business, real productive business, gets started.
Mm.
And until we see that, until we get through all of the necessary write-offs that have to happen around the world, we're going to muddle along and we're going to pretend that we can fix it with the kind of nonsense band-aids that this bailout-minded governments we have seem to want to persuade us is that they can make it happen.
That's the answer, yeah.
Yeah.
We've been listening to Eric Anderson. Eric, I'm going to ask you to say your final piece, and then I'm going to have a quick chat with Stephanie McDowell. So, Eric, where is this going? What's the end game? Is it are the international bankers going to one by one take over all the countries' financial? What's going on?
Well, I'm going to try and end on a positive note.
Okay, that'd be nice.
Because I think, like my Australian friend believes, that they've overplayed their hand and they're going to self-destruct because they've done so.
Hmm.
And in the end, just like your friend we were talking to before the program, the end will come when people realize that they're fine. They just need to go out and do something, and they're fine. They don't need a bank. They don't need this financial stuff. They're fine. And I think that's in front of us, but can't say when.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much, Eric Anderson.
Yeah.
And let's move over to Stephanie McDowell. You've been a telephone guest in the past, and I would like to have you back as a full guest. Can you tell me what some of the topics that you're most interested in right now and things that you would like to bring to the show when you return?
Well, I'm very interested in what's going on in the Middle East. I'm interested in the social justice issues. I'm deeply concerned about the cutbacks this provincial government is making to all kinds of social support programs. And I just read today about all the cutbacks with regard to legal aid and legal assistance for people. There's a host of things that I'm interested in. You name it, I'm interested. Mm. I just don't know what Eric knows when it comes to finance economics.
Yeah. Well, I would like to thank both of you for coming down today. So thank you. And Stephanie, we're definitely going to have you back in the coming weeks.
Good. Thanks very much.
Very nice. Okay. Well, thank you. Be well. Okay, friends, there we are. That has been Eric Anderson, an economist, independent, I should say, and Stephanie McDowell, a news hound, both of which reside on Gabriola. So let me remind you that you're listening to the Unbought and Unbossed radio show on CHLY. I'm going to put on an audio clip, and I will follow it up with an article that is on the same topic, and who we're going to listen to right now is John Coleman, who is the founder of the Weather Network, and this takes place on Fox TV with a real jerk of a interviewer, but they mostly are on Fox, I suppose. However, the topic is Al Gore being sued by over 30,000 scientists for the global warming fraud. Now, the follow-up article, I pulled this off of PrisonPlanet.com this afternoon by Paul Joseph Watson. It's called Al Gore Admits CO2 Does Not Cause the Majority of Global Warming, and that this startling concession devastates the legitimacy of the carbon tax and the cap-and-trade agenda. So, there we are. I will be back shortly, so hang in there, friends, and we'll talk to you soon.
My next guest wants to sue Al Gore for fraud. He hopes a legal challenge will settle the global warming debate once and for all. He's John Coleman, and he founded the Weather Channel. My favorite channel has some of the hottest women there. And now he works as a weatherman for KUSI-TV in San Diego. He knows warm fronts like I know cold cuts. So, John, why do you want to sue Al Gore?
Well, the deal is this, Greg. We have tried and tried and tried to get a debate on global warming with scientists on the other side. Al Gore or any of the scientists behind him over at the UN IPCC, we'd love to have a debate with them, but they say, oh, no, the debate is over.
Yeah.
Well, now there are 30,000 of us.
Mm-hmm.
We have 30,000 scientists, 9,000 PhDs, who have signed up to debunk global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And they still won't listen to us. You realize that Fox is the only cable network that will put us on the air. CNN won't. That other thing, MSNBC,
yeah,
it won't. CBS, ABC, NBC, they scoff at us.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get on the air. If it weren't for the Internet, you wouldn't even know I existed.
Yeah, no, that's
so, the whole deal is that somehow we have to be heard. So we figure maybe a court of law.
Now, let me ask you, do you think, why hasn't Al responded to you? Is he scared, or is he just pretending you don't exist?
Well, I think he regards us as just a little gnat.
Mm-hmm.
After all, he's a former Vice President of the United States. He's got an Oscar. He's got a Grammy. He's got $100 million. He's got a Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to scare him? I wish.
Now, you say in a lot of your writing that global warming is a scam. Why do you think that?
Well, if you study all the papers of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, if you study everything their scientists have done, it all boils down to a claim that carbon dioxide, CO2 in the atmosphere, put there by our burning of fossil fuels, is going to turn the climate of Earth into an oven, and we're all going to bake and die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's sheer nonsense. We have been burning fossil fuels for 100 years. And what have we done so far? We might have raised the temperature by one-tenth of 1 degree, maybe. CO2 is a natural compound in the atmosphere. It's not a pollutant.
No, it's
plants
like,
have to have
it's like water vapor.
Every time I breathe out, I create it. It is no big deal, and it's certainly not going to end the world.
No, if you believe what the global warming freaks are saying, it's something so evil, but it's no different than basic water vapor. I mean, it's just a substance that's out there. But I got to ask you, because there is so much science out there that's saying that this is purely hypothetical nonsense, why did it become such a widely held belief? Why is global warming so, easily embraced by people in Hollywood, by people in the media?
Well, it's the most amazing part of the story, really. How did it become such a huge accepted scam? I mean, it started off with some environmentalists and some one-world politicians at the UN who had World Earth Day in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, they finally managed to create this IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change at the UN. They claimed, of course, that that was something, had something to do with science. All it was an environmental advocacy group.
Mm-hmm.
Then Al Gore learned a little bit about CO2 in college, one course, learned a little, and all of a sudden he became an expert. So he becomes vice president. The UN starts voicing this thing on us. And the media, which loves a crisis, loves to tell us that the world is coming to an end, the media jumped aboard, and once the media was aboard, so you got the UN, you got Al Gore, you got the media, what are the politicians going to do? They follow.
What's interesting is almost with every issue, with almost every issue, you're allowed some kind of debate or dissent. And this is worse, actually, worse than any kind of religion where you're not allowed to dissent. You can't say anything without being called an idiot or crazy.
It's become a religion. That's exactly what it's become, an environmentalist religion. Mm-hmm. And, of course, green and environmentalism is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. I'm an environmentalist. But wait a minute. You're not going to turn me into an extremist, and you're not going to get me to tell a lie to try to accomplish an environmental goal. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they're doing.
Speaking of goal, what does a hockey stick have to do with all this?
Well, this goes back to the start of it all. A professor at an American university named Michael Mann created a graph of temperatures through millennium flatlining and then shooting up at the end, the shape of a hockey stick. And the UN panel said, ooh, love that.
Yeah.
And they kind of made it their Bible. And it became the cornerstone of their whole campaign. Now it has been proved without a shadow of a doubt to be built on absolutely bad science. You can put any data into that formula, and it'll come out a hockey stick no matter what.
Well, you know, John...
the whole thing was manipulated.
John, I'm actually looking forward to the return of the Ice Age, because I know that's going to be the next catastrophe, probably in the next decade. We got to run. Thank you, John Coleman, founder of the Weather Channel, my favorite channel, aside from Fox News Channel.
Hey, Raymond, I hear you're having an epic event on Sunday, November 29th.
I sure am, Lynn. Thanks. It's called the 2009 Truth Convergence, Project Uncensored, an all-day conference from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. in two halves. The first half is from 11 to 3 p.m., features speakers Nick Versteg, Wayne Pronte, and Will Thomas. The second half goes from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., Kevin Annett, Paul Grignion, and Splitting the Sky.
Wow, where is it and how much?
It's at Vancouver Island University, Nanaimo Campus, building 355, room 203. The cost is $20 for the all day. The half day is $12.
Great, Raymond. Looking forward to seeing you there on Sunday, November 29th.
Hey, thanks, Chuck. How you guys doing? This is Raymond. That was my ad. I think that's the first time it's been played. And thanks again, Lynn Thompson, for helping me out with that. Where are we? What are we doing? What's going on? Well, I just played an audio clip talking about Al Gore, and the person speaking was John Coleman, founder of the Weather Channel, and he's saying that, this global warming fraud caused by humans is indeed a fraud. And however, we have some interesting news all of a sudden that Al Gore admits that CO2 does not cause the majority of global warming. And that this startling concession devastates the legitimacy of the carbon tax and the cap and trade agenda. Now, keep in mind, earlier this year, that wonderful Premier Gordon Campbell added 2 cents onto our gasoline price as a tax to encourage you to drive less, to not heat up the planet, and do all those devastating things that might happen due to that. So let us take a look at what Al Gore is having to say. He seems to have changed his mind a bit. So again, this comes from PrisonPlanet.com. The author is Paul Joseph Watson. It is dated today. So, in a new development that is potentially devastating to the agenda to introduce a global carbon tax and a cap-and-trade system, Al Gore admits that the majority of global warming that occurred until 2001 was not primarily caused by CO2. Before we get too excited, though, Gore is not backing away from his support of the theory of man-made climate change. But his concession that carbon dioxide only accounted for 40% of warming, according to new studies, could seriously harm effects to tax CO2, that evil life-giving gas that humans exhale and plants absorb. Quote, Gore acknowledged to Newsweek that the findings could complicate efforts to build a political consensus around the need to limit carbon emissions, so says BB News. I don't know BB News. They're new to me. Yesterday, PrisonPlanet.com reported on how Gore was set to become the first carbon billionaire on the back of vast profits from companies invested in the Green Revolution that the former vice president has a hefty stake in. We also highlighted how the Chicago Climate Exchange, the CCX, has direct ties to both Al Gore and Maurice Strong, two figures intimately involved with a long-standing movement to use the theory of man-made global warming as a mechanism for profit and social engineering. Gore's investment company, Generation Investment Management, which sells carbon offset opportunities, is the largest shareholder of the Chicago Climate Exchange. Now, I believe there's two of those, another one in London. Gore stands to make windfall profits from his stake in carbon trading systems that would be used to manage the cap-and-trade system currently being readied for passage in the Senate. But his admission that CO2 is far less of a threat than global warming alarmists have been claiming could be a terminal blow for such a proposal. I say we should get our 2 cents back, that's for one. As Andrew Bolt writes in today's Australian Herald Sun, his flip-flopping suggests not only that Gore was wrong to claim that science was settled on this issue, but that the hugely expensive scheme to stop warming by slashing carbon dioxide emissions would be less than half as effective as he claimed. Gore now blames soot and methane for the majority of global warming, and I'm wondering why he isn't talking about the sun itself. Isn't that where all the heat comes from? I think so. So, however, this leaves the door open for attacks on, well, livestock, attacks on meat, attacks on milk, and on and on and on, until, of course, he changes his mind again and blames another culprit, so that can be taxed too. Yes, indeed, there we are, an inconvenient truth, just got a little bit more complicated. Okay, very nice, so, all right, global warming is not, according to Al Gore, only man-made. The cows passing gas are a big part of that as well. So, there we are. Let's see, we got to 12 after. I think I'm going to play an audio clip, and then I'll come back and do the campus community update. So, the piece that we're going to hear right now is Gary Null, N-U-L-L, speaking out at the New York State Assembly hearing, which took place last month, October 13th. It's a three-part, three clips on YouTube. We're going to be hearing the first one. Now, Gary Null, okay, well, first off, what he's speaking out about is the H1N1 flu vaccine, as well as vaccines in general. They do not seem to be nearly as effective as science and history is telling us. So, interesting stuff. Gary Null, I should tell you, is an American radio talk show host and author on alternative and complementary medicine and nutrition. He's also an outspoken critic of the medical and psychiatric communities. This is indeed a pretty powerful speech from an expert who's been studying this for many, many, many years. So this is part one of three. Gary Null, talking at the New York State Assembly hearing. So let's move on to that. And I'll be back in about 9 minutes, friends. Be well.
There's an old Jewish saying, a half-truth is a full lie. I begin my discussion by asking two basic questions. Are vaccines safe? If so, what is the proof? Are vaccines effective? If so, what is the proof? I am not talking about all vaccines, though this applies to all vaccines, specifically on what we're dealing with. I have reviewed the scientific literature extensively. I have spent the last 7.5 years with thousands of hours of research on the subject of autism and what connections they may have to environmental factors, including vaccines. Not just the thimerosal in vaccines, but the other ingredients as well. I produced an award-winning document called Autism in the USA. I produced a separate document called Vaccine Nation, representing all sides, all of it, the primary sponsor in the United States, vaccines in general, Bissinger has to say. I then did something that I thought had been done, and I was surprised when I realized it had not. When I began to review what amounted to thousands of peer-reviewed literature studies on vaccines, I found that I could find no convincing evidence that any vaccine at all had long-term double-blind placebo-controlled study trials, and even when they said, when the evidence I did examine, that the CDC and the FDA and other organizations were using as, of course they're studies, and they showed the studies, they would say, well, this is a study, and then I would find that, well, you left out the virus part of the vaccine, but you included all the other ingredients, including thimerosal and mercury and formaldehyde, etc. Well, that's not a placebo. And in good science, you don't use that as a placebo. I also saw that virtually all the studies that were supporting the vaccines were done by the vaccine manufacturers. And since the FDA does not do independent studies on the creation, safety, and efficacy of vaccines, but rather relies upon the information from the vaccine manufacturers, and there's a very close relationship, I then took a very careful look at this relationship and found that more than 50% of people sitting on the FDA and the CDC's vaccine advisory program were from vaccine manufacturers. I thought this was a gross conflict of interest. The rationale was given that there are not enough experts who are independent to sit on these committees. And I thought that's absurd. There are more than 3 million outstanding scientists in the United States. Don't tell me you can't find 15 who have no industry affiliation to sit on a vaccine scheduling committee. I then took a careful look, and here's what I found. And this is where you have to bring the pieces together or you lose sight. We're too close, too narrow on this issue. First, when a child is given a vaccine, adults given a vaccine, senior citizens given a vaccine, rarely, if ever, has anyone done any study that I can find, and I'm open to the fact I may not have found one that was done, but I looked at thousands, where they looked at combinations of vaccine used in a given individual to see what short and long-term impact it might have had. Now, the panel before said that only 2% of vaccine adverse reactions are reported. The highest number I could find was the FDA's 10%. When you consider that $1.3 billion has been given out in vaccine damage, and you consider that the criteria for receiving that award is based upon getting the proof that your vaccine injury occurred in a very narrow frame of time, and then you look at the epidemiological evidence, you talk with immunologists, you talk with people, and every specialty in medicine, they will tell you many people will have a delayed reaction to a vaccine. It might be a month, 6 months, a year, even 2 years. For 18 years, sir, I have been trying to help the Gulf War veterans in the United States do something that I'm appalled to say that our own federal agencies have failed to do, including Bush Sr., Clinton, and Bush Jr. administrations. Acknowledge that 400,000 GIs who are sick at Gulf War Center actually have something other than post-traumatic stress disorder. I've done 3 award-winning documentaries on their plight. I've interviewed over 1,000 of them. I've interviewed people who have massive body lesions, who have rare and exotic diseases, who have brain and neurological disorders, having nothing to do with post-traumatic, didn't even go to the Gulf Theater. They got the vaccines, the experimental anthrax vaccine, the experimental botulism vaccine, that the FDA, similar to what it's doing with swine flu, gave a pass, an exemption on long-term studies. Those Americans, those brave, courageous Americans, over 33,000 are reported dead. Their statistics appear nowhere, only by those who are Gulf War veterans putting together their own figures. They have gone to Washington. I've gone to Washington to interview Chris Todd. I've gone to Washington to interview the people in the presence of the Gulf War vet, a man who got out of bed in the morning, had to crawl to get to his daughter because his legs were swollen the size of a football. A woman who had no illnesses, 22 years old, was in the Gulf that got the vaccines and now couldn't walk in bed 16, 18 hours a day. The government has refused to acknowledge the Gulf War Center is legitimate. To this day, now, I've read the hearings, and I saw all of those white coat phenomena, the scientists and physicians that we bow down to, marching in and giving testimony. I had every word they said at every committee hearing. Rockefeller Committee, all of them, and they all were in gross denial. Whose interests were they serving? Certainly not the sick Gulf vets. And you would see the Gulf West determined to get their story out. No one listening. No one has looked at the facts. There are 44 separate studies, 44 today, that showed that golf course syndrome is real and that it was due to what they were exposed to. These are real diseases for decades, and more, they said there's no diseases. Now, I'm wanting to ask, you're willing to inject pregnant women in this state or fire them if they don't take a vaccine. Are you or any member here, anyone as the governor, is anyone in the state going to be held personally and legally responsible if that developing fetus gets that mercury into their brain and ends up with a learning disability, with autism, with any one of the autism spectrum disorders, or ends up with some form of intellectual deficit? We have an epidemic. I did another award-winning documentary called The Drugging of Our Children. Appalling to know that when you were going to school, when I was going to school, no kid got drugged. Today, 10 million American children don't go to school before they get a class 2 drug, the same class as cocaine. Do we actually have a new epidemic that didn't happen to any generation in American history, anywhere else in the world, but suddenly happened in the last 25 years to the newest generation? They have a brain chemical imbalance? No. And yet the so-called experts, the very experts that you would rely upon, are saying, well, must be something wrong, that's why we're giving them the drugs must work. And I say, no. The number one cause of death in the United States in 10 to 14-year-old boys is suicide. How many kids committed suicide when you were going to school, sir? None when I went to school, and I went to the largest high school in my state, 5,500 students, Park Creek High School. So what do we have? A whole new generation of people where autism is suddenly showing its head that never before? If autism were historically there, then everyone in their 50s, 60s, and 70s would start representing at least percentage-wise population autism in adults. We don't see it. It doesn't exist. And yet we refuse to acknowledge that what they're getting early in life could be contributing to it. So I'm saying, I am not willing to set by quietly and allow women who've been used and abused by the medical authorities, the very same medical doctors who have sit here with great certainty and enormous hubris and contempt for women, say, your body is our concern, your developing fetus is in our best interest to make sure it's born healthy, and they give them mercury. You ask that same doctor, would you give that woman lead? Would you give anyone in this room lead? If you did, you would go to jail. So you're going to give something more toxic than lead to every one of these pregnant women? Sir, I'm appalled and I'm offended in the extreme, and I will not contain my concern, because these same women that we're so-called interested in, for the last 35 years, I've been one of the leading people advocating against synthetic hormone replacement therapy. We know now it causes breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart attacks, dementia, and stroke. 10% minimum, 13% more likely. You're talking about 10 million women. That's 1.3 million women we're allowing to be sacrificed on the altar of ignorance or greed or hubris. My mother died of a heart attack in the middle of the night, and she was taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy. Now, another part of this scenario is the number one cause of death in the United States is American medicine. I did a report that has not been refuted with five other MD board certified and PhDs called Death by Medicine.
Yeah. Hey friends, welcome back. That was Gary Null speaking out about these vaccines. I'm not a medical expert, but it is my layman's opinion that you should not be getting this vaccine that they're handing out. And I don't know who you should go to. I don't recommend you go to your doctor to find out. Tough one. Actually, there is a website, falseflagflu.com. A lot of alternative information that I think would be very helpful. That's falseflagflu.com. As a matter of fact, that is one of the sponsors of CHLY. And as you know, this is the Campus Community Update song. I don't want to be a soldier. I've got a couple other sponsors. Roberts Creek Vice reminding you that silence is complicity. Yes, indeed. As well, warcriminalsout.com. There we are. Thank you to those sponsors of independent radio. How important is that? Chemainus, B.C., Friday the 13th. Very scary. At 8 p.m. Okay, very nice. I already told you who the sponsors are for that. So, well done. Okay, now, we just have enough time to put on this final audio clip that will conclude the show. And it is myself and Lynn Living on Purpose Thompson talking about the conference I'm putting on November the 29th. You might have heard this before if you listen in the daytime to Living on Purpose. I'm going to rebroadcast it now. I give in-depth discussion on who's going to be there, what the topics are, and everything you need to know about this Truth Convergence Project Uncensored. So I would like to thank you all for tuning in, and we're going to do it again next week. Okay, friends, be well out there.
Okay, Raymond has returned, and I will talk to you more in a little bit about all that. Hi, Raymond.
Hi, Lynn. How you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. Okay, so you have a big project coming up, and that's what we are using this moment of Living on Purpose for the next 20 minutes or so to talk about a big, unprecedented, epic event you have coming up in a month.
Wow, epic. Well, I certainly hope so. I'm planning on that. It's the first conference that I've put together, and I guess kind of being part of this truth movement, this alternative internet reality that, you know, my show, which is the Unbought and Unbossed show, attempts to delve into. And what I've done is, first off, we have a wealth of very learned people, activists, that are looking at, well, alternative theories to what's going on in the world. You know, why, for example, are we giving trillions and trillions of dollars to bankers that have purposefully, you know, collapsed our system, and they've done it in the past, and they're doing it again, and so just lots of fantastic topics. So I made Sells. I said, would you be willing to speak at a conference on this subject? And fortunately, everyone said yes. And so that was really, you know, everything seems to be going
your way.
Well, the way, perhaps.
Yeah.
So I'm calling this the 2009 Truth Convergence Project Uncensored. That's the full title. And, of course, I stole the there's a fantastic book that comes out every year. Peter Phillips, I believe, out of Northern California, does Project Censored with his university class, in which they look at the 25, well, most censored, least covered, important stories of the year. So I've borrowed that, and I put uncensored because hopefully I'm going to be helping these six presenters discuss, you know, very pertinent topics, which we'll be getting into a little bit later. So I'm hopefully going to uncensor this stuff and bring some, what I consider some really important information, you know, if we're going to, if we're going to, I don't want to say survive, I don't want to be doomy gloomy, but if we're going to make a smooth transition into the coming years and the political spectrum that we're working under. There we are.
All right, well, that's a good, in a nutshell, overview of your project. And I know that many listeners of CHLY are familiar with the Unbought and Unbossed show. And, of course, you are the host, Raymond Geisler. And you have archives of your show, right? Do you want to just give a plug for that?
Sure. I record and publish most of the shows at unbossed.livejournal.com, which is where I tell you, you know, what was on last week, the interview, the music I played, the articles I read from. So it's just a database of what I guess kind of a companion piece to the audio segment, which is archived at archive.org, as a matter of fact. So there's you'll find a link from my website. I'll repeat it one more time, unbossed.livejournal.com. And, I've had some pretty big names on the show in the past, and I certainly plan on continuing. Thanks.
Okay, so some of the people who, well, actually, I think all of the people who are at the event that you're organizing for the end of November, this is actually Sunday, November 29th, at the Vancouver Island University, building 355, room 203. They're pretty nice rooms up there, eh, for this type of thing. They're quite high, like, slanted seating,
that's
so that
right.
You everybody has a view,
yeah,
and you're all focused.
It's a small enough room in which that we won't need to be using a microphone. Everyone will be able to hear. You know, it's a very quaint setting, step down. So, yeah, it's a fantastic room. As a matter of fact, if you went and saw William Rodriguez, the Last Man Out of the World Trade Center, and since went on to be a truth teller, you know, reporting things that weren't in the official story. So when he came through Nanaimo, that's where I set him up. I believe it's the Gustafson Lecture Hall, the Canadian poet Gustafson. So, yeah, it's a Sunday. It's an all-day event, November 29th. I've broken it into two segments. All day would be 9 hours, and that might be a little bit too long for some people. That's, you know, a lot of information. 9 hours is pretty tough. So there is a first and a second half, and I think that would... Well, you know, if I haven't told you the topics yet, but, you know, if there's a topic that you're most interested in, then, you know, you might only want to go to the first or the second half. Do we want to talk about some of the presenters, or...?
Well, yeah, because I was thinking that I think all of them have been guests on your show, and that's probably partly why you called on them and why they already felt a connection with you and a willingness to participate and see this as a venue for a presence. I mean, a lot of them don't live here in Nanaimo, so... some of them live locally, and so it's an opportunity to pull this together. I think it's very exciting, and definitely I would like to hear more about each brief, you know, a brief overview of each guest and just a rundown of how you've organized the event, Raymond.
Sure. Well, thanks, Lynn. So let's look at the first half. There's going to be three speakers, three presenters in each half, and the first half will go from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., so 4 hours, so, you know, approximately a little over an hour per presenter. And then the second half will go from 4 to 8 p.m. And four of the six presenters are very, very local. I'm hoping that, you know, they will also be getting the word out and, you know, try to fill this fairly small lecture hall. But with six different topics. And you know what? 9/11 is not one of them. People keep asking me, well, where is the 9/11? And it's not one of the topics. That's not necessarily an oversight. For example, if one of these six people can't make it, I will present a lecture on 9/11 myself. That's kind of my expertise. So who do we have going on? First off, Nick Versteg. He's going to be looking at food security, what it means, why we should be concerned, because basically what is happening is that the marketing of food by large corporations and the media that influences our decisions is really having, I guess you could say, a negative impact on our food choices. We're running out of healthy alternatives. So Nick Versteg is a longtime documentarian, award-winning as well. So he's looked at many different food topics. But he's been on most of the, like, for example, he's been on A&E, the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, the Food Network, CBC, CTV. His shows have been, he's a well-seasoned documentarian. And perhaps his most famous video came out perhaps last year, and it's called Island on the Edge. And that's talking about Vancouver Island and how... the food security that we have, let's say that we were disconnected from the lower mainland, you know, how could we take care of ourselves? And he's got some real positive suggestions. So that's going to be the first topic, food security, what it means, what the problems are. So, you know, there's a lot of foodies out there, and so this is for you. The second guest of the morning show will be Wayne Pronte. He's a big friend to the CHLLY radio station. He's really comes through with his pledges, and he's been a big financial supporter of my show in particular, but of course CHLY in general. And Wayne is, well, he's one heck of an activist. He's also an organizer, and I really admire, and I've learned how to organize events in part through him. He put on the Vancouver 9/11 Truth Conference in 2007, which was a really big conference, for the world as far as 9/11. You know, it was a huge three-day event. It was, you know, it was catered food. It was, you know, huge, big-name presenters that came from all over the world. It was really a top-rate conference. However, Wayne has shifted his focus to looking at this H1N1. Flu, you know, this is swine flu that they're pushing daily in the newspapers, and from the very beginning he saw a lot of inconsistencies, and he is suspecting that, well, I'll just lay it all
right
out.
Dive right in there, Raymond.
He's going to strongly suggest that you do not get the vaccine. He's looked at the ingredients. He's working with many persons in the medical profession. Well, as a matter of fact, it's kind of a world movement right now, this anti-forced vaccination movement right now. It's this H1N1, which the World Health Organization declared it, like, you know, a level 6, like, you know, flashing red. It's, this thing is going to destroy us all really, really quick. And unfortunately, people in Canada, we have to do what the World Health Organization says. That doesn't quite seem right, but they're telling us that we need to be vaccinated, and there's there's an awful lot to go along with that story. He's going to briefly talk about the history of vaccinations. Do they even work or not? You know, it's really interesting that, you know, the medical profession has been, you know, saying something for so long, and it just keeps getting taught as if it's true. And, well, if you dig deep enough, you might find that vaccines have really not been as effective as history kind of claims. So, you know, the people are not dying from this swine flu virus. For example, the current numbers right now, there's 86 deaths in Canada that have been labeled due to the H1N1. However, they're not even testing. So if anyone dies from flu, they're going to call it the H1N1. However, the big problem is that on average, 2,500 Canadians every year die of the flu. So we're, I guess, kind of moving into the height of flu season right now, and there's just slightly over 3% of the population have succumbed to H1N1 that would normally happen in a regular year. There's way too much hype, and the numbers don't crunch. You know, what about the 97%? You know, shouldn't we maybe be finding out what's killing, you know, 97% of us due to the flu instead of the 3%? Big problem. So that's Wayne Pronte. He's going to be looking at false flag operations, and he believes that he's calling it Swine 11. You know, little tongue-in-cheek there, you know, with you know, 9/11 being a false flag, and he believes that this flu fear is a false flag campaign. Phooey, there's a lot of F's in there. So that's Wayne Pronte.
Okay.
Should we move to the third one here? Okay, very nice. The third one is Will Thomas, and I first met him at the 2007 Vancouver Truth Conference. He, as a matter of fact, wrote the first book on the 9/11 conspiracy. However, I believe it burned down in a warehouse. His books hadn't been shipped out, and they burned down. So that was, like, he was on it, like,
conspiracy.
I think his book was published 2 months after the event happened. So he was on it absolutely quickly. However, Will Thomas also is credited with being the first investigative journalist to crack the story on chemtrails. He's written a book on that. Those clouds that, you know, are in funny lines and they don't behave like a comtrail or comtrail. So basically it appears that our governments are secretly putting toxins into the environment and they seep down, and, you know, there's been a lot of research since. However, we can't get a politician to, you know, really run with it and say, what is this secrecy about these chemtrails? You know, it's not really deniable. Photographic evidence is very, very clear. So Will Thomas has also been studying cell phone dangers and this whole electromagnetic, the energy grids that we use is out of sync with our human energy grids, and it's causing a lot of problems. So he's calling his lecture Cell Phones Out of the Box, Radical Reflections on the Wireless Revolution. So the gist of what he's saying is that a lot of these new technologies are not proven safe and that they are not safe. And we're buying them up, and, you know, these cell phones that, you know, so many people are glued to that thing next to their head, and there's a lot of illnesses that could certainly be attributed to, you know, holding an electrical device next to your brain, you know, in a lot of cases for many times or many hours a day. It's so, you know, most people have cell phones nowadays. I think we all know someone that has a cell phone. So this will be, I think, a very important topic that will be of importance to most everyone in the theater that night. So
I'm speaking with Raymond Geisler here on Living on Purpose, and he's just gone through the first three speakers of the day, which is organized on Sunday, November 29th, which is coming up in a month. We're in the last week of October right now. And, yeah, this event is going from 11 to 8 that day and broken up into two parts, which I think is manageable. It's sort of like a film festival, only it's a live speaker event with a number of topics. So, so Raymond, tell us about what's happening in that second half then from 4 to 8 after, I guess, there'll be a bit of a break then, eh?
Yeah, we're asking that you don't eat food in the lecture hall, so I've put an hour in between for those that are there for the full day, that, you know, they can step outside and enjoy something to eat.
Well, and they can also at the same time digest what they've heard and prepare their palate for the next course.
Very nice. Yes, indeed. So the first half we looked at food issues, big pharma issues, as well as the technological revolutions that are happening right now. In the second half, we're going to be looking at church and state, as well as the monetary system that we're using. And then finally, the war on terror, which I call the war of terror. So the first speaker in the second half will be former minister turned whistleblower, Kevin Annett. And he's going to be speaking on genocide, both global and local. And Kevin is also an author. He's written a couple of books on the subject. He's a radio host. He's traveling the world. This month, he was at the Vatican in Rome. Insisting that he's attempting to hold the Catholic Church responsible for their knowingly killing and disappearing tens of thousands of Canadian First Nations children in the residential schools. And that's a big taboo that, you know, politicians don't want to talk about. And Kevin is just the loudest voice by far in Canada on this topic. And he's an amazing speaker for one. He's a very brave fellow, and I have a lot of respect for this fellow. He's a fairly regular contributor to my show. He's always putting on different actions. So he's going to be speaking on genocide, both of the local Canadian peoples, as well as putting it into a global and historical context of genocide. Okay, so after that is Paul Grignon. He's out of Gabriola Island, and his claim to fame is the film Money as Debt, which has been seen worldwide by tens of millions of people. It's been translated, I believe, into 14 languages. Apparently, there's quite a few governments that are using that as a training tool on how money works. And, well, money is actually debt. So Paul Grignon is an expert in this field, and he's going to be speaking on, in particular, he's calling his lecture Money, Jailer or Liberator. So that, to me, is so, so important because, you know, we're looking at the bailouts of many industries. The most frightening one is giving, you know, trillions of dollars literally to these international bankers that basically remain nameless and faceless. It's really a frightening situation. It seems as if our money and our economies are being bankrupted by the people that are supposed to be making sure that that doesn't happen. So certainly a big conflict of interest there. Okay, well, let's move into the final one. John Boncour, otherwise known as Splitting the Sky, he's a Mohawk First Nation activist. He was involved in the Attica State Rebellion in 71. He was involved in the Gustavson Lake standoff in BC in the mid-90s. He's since become a 9/11 truth activist and speaker, and his most recent, I guess, kind of claim to fame is that he attempted to place George W. Bush, the former president, under citizen's arrest in Calgary earlier this year in March in Calgary. Now, George Bush is continuing his speaking tour, you know, collecting this blood money. I don't know what he could talk about. I can't imagine the guy putting five sentences together in a row, but he's out there probably, you know, doing a comedy routine. You know, his little shtick, you know, look at me, I'm pretty funny. You know, hey, I'm Mr. C-grade guy that made it to president. Anything can happen. You know, I mean, he's a creep. So John Boncour, Splitting the Sky, is going to be exposing the Cheney Bush cabal as well. He's going to put those current war criminals, he's going to tie it into a historical situation, looking at war criminals of past and present, and the differences and the similarities between that. So that is a lot of information. And I'm certainly looking forward to it. When I was looking to put this conference together, I thought, well, who would I like to listen to and what topics am I most interested in and do I think would have the most relevance for the people in my community to learn about? And these are the six that I chose, and I'm really hoping that a lot of people come out and get a different take, you know, than what you're getting on your television or your corporate radio or newspapers. So that's what the conference is about, just information that is seldom out there. I'm trying to uncensor this information by these experts and present it to the folks of, well, Central Vancouver Island, I guess.
You guess?
I guess. I don't know if I'm getting people coming from away, but...
Yeah, you don't know where people will be coming from, but at the beginning of this, Raymond, you said that you'd made 7 calls?
Yeah, unfortunately, Paul Manley, the videographer, his latest film, which he's on tour right now promoting, is You, Me, and the SPP, looking at the merger of the three North American economies and political systems. So I guess they'd be, you know, the Pentagon would probably be the senior government running, you know, with things that, you know, Canada is not quite as sovereign as we'd wish, and the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is, they're actually going under new names now. It's kind of ever-evolving, and President Obama promised that he would take a look at this and end it. And, well, he gave it a new title and is going full steam ahead. Unfortunately, there's a scheduling conflict. Paul Manley won't be able to make it. Perhaps the next conference I put on, he'll be able to take part in that one.
Yeah, right on. Well, yeah, that's good to know, because he would be a natural fit for your conference, which is called 2009 Truth Convergence, Project Uncensored, and that's happening again on Sunday, November 29th in Nanaimo at the Vancouver Island University, building 355, room 203. Urgent information our governments and mainstream media ignore and or distort. Being informed is our best defense. Isn't that something they're saying... you know, hand washing is your best defense for the virus?
Good
or
point.
For the flu or whatever?
The Canadian federal government right now, some of their propaganda is they stole, because I wrote that first, and they're now telling you to go to the post office, your local post office, and get the information you need to as for why you need to get the swine flu shot. And they remind us at the very end of the commercial, being informed is our best defense. So hear, but we have different information to share, I suppose, than the post office.
Well, yeah, and then there's also the fact that some people, or the fact, the idea that some people might call these people fearmongers or paranoid or conspiracy theorists. But what would you say to that, Raymond?
That myself and the people that would come to this event would be conspiracy theorists? Well, in the research that I've done, I'm under the impression right now that things don't happen by accident, that as a matter of fact, the people do conspire, the people at the top of the pyramid, and well, we pretty much do live in a giant conspiracy. You know, when's the last time that, you know, you and your neighbor voted and had a meaningful input into a key decision that will lead our country in a direction? I don't see the people taking part. I don't see our elected representatives representing us. I see them representing moneyed interests. And so if you want to call that a conspiracy, you know, people working behind, you know, behind the rooms in private making decisions, well, that to me sounds like a conspiracy. Well, it is, as a matter of fact. And that is my interpretation of how we're slugging forward in this crazy times is partly through conspiracy. Now, I do have a poster for this event, and it's the first poster I've ever made, and I sent it out to get some feedback on it, and unfortunately I've gotten as many negative responses as positive. And so what I've, silly me, I have a photograph in the background that some clever person with their Photoshop, he's disguised. Now, these are actual photos of a wolf in sheep's clothing, so it's very realistic looking. But I've got the announcement, you know, the event, the pertinent information you need to know on top of that. So I had one fellow saying, well, that's, you broke rule number one. You can't cover up a picture in the background. However, I don't know. I think it works quite well. And the picture in the background is very, very simple. You know, the idea of sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, we in the West kind of know, but we very seldom see an image representing that idea. And so that's what the image is on the poster, which you'll be seeing around town and up at the university. But the problem here, you might think that we are the sheep. Unfortunately, that's not the case. The wolf, they're the global elite. They're the ones that have so much money and power that they're pushing this one world government. And we're going to see the American dollar collapse and bring in a one world currency. That's my take on that. And I have a feeling Paul Grignion will back me up. And then the sheep, it's not you and I. It's actually our politicians. They're, well, them and the media personalities, they're basically doing what they're being told to do from above, you know, and they're following this, you know, I mean, well, I've got lots to say about the media. I won't go on a side tangent on that. However, where it comes, where we're in the picture, well, maybe we're a flea on the sheep. I'm not too sure. We're well below the sheep right now, and that's really unfortunate because, as I already explained, I don't think that the media and our politicians represent the real issues and the concerns of the regular Canadians. So there you go. Careful of those sheep as well.
Yeah, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. So you're talking about the world being a play for other people and we're sort of little specks, bystanders, but I like to think that we can also be the directors of our own lives, so I'm not quite sure how that kind of connects all those different perspectives on what's going on in the planet. We're just at the bottom of the hour, and I want to let you know that you're listening to Living on Purpose. This is a freshly live recorded, recorded live.
Take one, we're still on.
Yeah, take one. Airing for 8 o'clock on Tuesday, October 27th, Raymond Geisler and I, colleagues here at CHOI for a number of years now. We're just in the upper studio, production studio at CHOI recording this because of our time constraints. And this is, of course, 101.7 FM CHOI and broadcasting from the heart of downtown Nanaimo. And we're just musing about a number of issues that are going to be featured at Raymond's upcoming event here. You'll be hearing an ad with our voices, I believe, over the next few weeks, giving promotion for it. Now, just on the topic of money, Raymond, you know, you were saying about the power elite who have so much money and power and all that. Well, I really am trying to find another phrase other than filthy rich or, you know, disgustingly rich or, you know, like, it seems that those kinds of expressions are, they're really, I believe, made by people who don't have a lot of money and are perhaps jealous or resentful that others do. Like, I don't know, as people who have money would refer to themselves or people they know like that. Not to say that, I just think that it's not really progressive if one has good, genuine, authentic, congruous reasons to look at pulling a lot of money together. There's sort of this stigma set up about having a lot of money and that there's a problem with that. I mean, there's a stigma indicating that there's a problem with having a lot of money. And so there's a problem with that perception in my mind because there's a conflict there. I mean, surely, you know, many people wouldn't choose to complain about not having enough money all their lives. Surely part of what people are striving for is to have more comfort, more abundance, more independence from working a job just over broke.
I think we're being manipulated. We're being trained through the media that it's not about having your needs fulfilled. It's about craving and your wants. You know, we're being fed all these new gimmicks that you need to have if you're going to be, you know, an up, hip, you know, cool guy that can, you know, has all the latest toys. So you were talking about the wealthy elite. And from what I can understand in my readings of history is that persons, when they become so wealthy, that money is, it could never be an issue again. What they covet next is power. And it's very, very easy to buy people's favors when you are so rich. When you are so rich that, let's say, the Fortune 500, you know, these companies, the CEOs, you know, the richest people on the planet, those lists that you see in different publications, those actually... that those people, while they are absolutely filthy rich, they do not make the... I'm going to talk to myself, hey, listen to the Unbought and Unbossed show. No. So Lynn is taking a call, and I'm very happily sharing with the CHLY listeners this 2009 Truth Convergence Project Uncensored. Now, I'm calling it a six-speaker conference with six different topics, but one thing in common, and that the information being shared is, being either omitted or distorted by our government and our corporate mainstream media. And that is so, so important that I've collected a group of six, for the most part, local experts in their own field, and I'm bringing them to Nanaimo. That's Sunday, November the 29th. It's an all-day event. $20 for all day, $12 for half day. The persons who phoned and made a pledge during the two pledge drives that I did last month, those people will get in half price, provided, of course, that you pay your pledge. So, you know, thanks again for supporting independent media, and I guess I'm trying to, you know, find a way to thank you for making that pledge.
Okay. Sorry about that, Raymond. Just a little call there I had to take. Can you reiterate where you were at?
I was just reminding listeners that the date of the event, I'll tell you quickly the speakers again. In the first half, Nick Verasteg, a documentarian looking at food security issues. Wayne Pronte, a researcher and organizer, going to be looking at the H1N1 false flag flu and the vaccine agenda. Does not look good. Thomas, an author and lecturer looking at cell phones and the dangers of our wireless technology. In the second half, Kevin Annett, the local whistleblower, former minister turned whistleblower looking at genocide, both local and global, followed by Paul Grignon, a documentarian, the creator of Money is Debt. He'll be looking at monetary issues. And lastly, closing the event will be Splitting the Sky, one of the best live speakers that I've ever seen. He's a Mohawk activist, writer, and actor. The man who attempted to arrest George Bush, place him under citizen's arrest, because, well, he is a credibly accused war criminal, and that is the term when they haven't gone to court. However, the charges are very real, and they would certainly go a long way in court. He's credibly accused of breaking numerous war laws. So this is all very topical stuff, and I hope that you can come out, and I'm looking forward to doing that and hopefully more conferences after that. So please come out and support this event, and I want to thank you, Lynn, for giving me the opportunity to share about this conference, and so thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Raymond, very much. And certainly this is a natural segue from the shows and the various interviews that you've been cultivating and producing on your show, the Unbought and Unbossed show, Unbought and Unbossed show here on CHLY. So, congratulations on pulling this together. And I'm sure it will be the start of other events because it's very timely.